Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Arrowhead Land Company. Here you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. What's up, folks? Welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. I am your host, John Hudspeth. Welcome to the show, and I have a little extra pep in my step this week because after what has been just such a long, grueling, full of bad luck, full of bad weather, whether it is hot or rain or whatever it might be, after just days and days of zero success, long hikes, long sits, lots of work, I finally had some success. Not that the success came super easy, and we'll get into that, but yeah, it feels so good to finally get something down, get some meat on the freezer, get something to put on the wall, hint something. So yeah, just an awesome weekend, an awesome trip that I just got back from, and obviously that's what we're going to be talking about today. So, I'm going to go ahead and let the cat out of the bag because, you know, I couldn't wait. I already put stuff out on social media and everything. I was successful on my trip. If you guys don't follow me on Instagram and stuff, get ready. Got a little twist to the hunt, but, yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about, obviously. I'm not going to waste too much time on the intro, even though I do have quite a bit of stuff to kind of catch y'all up on. Man, we're almost halfway through December at this point. I still have zero whitetails down this year, which is kind of crazy to think about. But so far, it seems like most of my bucks that I either am chasing or wanted to make it to next year are still out there. I believe I lost one, actually probably my number one buck that I was going after this year, an old 8-point. I can't remember what I named him. I think I named him, but I haven't seen him since the first weekend of gun season, so I'm pretty sure he got by a neighbor. Actually, the buck that I think was second on my hit list, I think he might have also got killed in like mid to early November. Haven't seen him in a while, and so I'm guessing he got shot with a bow or a crossbow. But luckily, both of those bucks were like not necessarily trophy deer, you know, just kind of older deer that I was going to hunt just because of their age, not necessarily because of their antlers. But so far, lucky, my good 13-point that's a 4-year-old, he is still alive. Got pictures of him. I've gotten pictures of him the last several nights. So that's awesome. My super wide 3-year-old, he is still alive. So that's awesome news. And I can't remember if I've mentioned him or not, but a new buck that kind of moved up to number one on my list has showed up. He showed up about this time last year, and last year he was an 8. I think I did mention him on here, yeah. Last year he was an 8. This year he grew some little bitty 4s, so he's technically a 10. And I believe he's 5 years old. Like I said, I had pictures of him last year, and he looked pretty mature. So he's kind of moved into that number one spot. He probably, like I said, antler-wise, he moved into that number one spot basically as soon as I saw him. And then since I've kind of realized, I think those other two bucks are gone, he's my main hit lister now. I also still have a really wide deer, actually at the same location, that I would shoot. Not a super high-scoring deer, but just kind of, he's mature enough that he needs to go, and he's incredibly wide, kind of short tines, but just kind of a cool buck. I did stop by my Texas place and check the camera. Nothing new has showed up. There was a buck. I know I've talked about him. He's the main buck I've talked about on that property. He was a 10-point. He broke off part of his main beam, so now he's only a 9. And he's the buck that I thought was only 3, but then after I've, you know, gotten to know this property more, I think he's actually 4. I think the deer just a little bit smaller bodied up there. Another buck has shown up. I think I may have mentioned him. He's a 9-point. I got some better pictures of him. I think he's also 4. And again, this lease that I'm on, it's just a 1-year deal. Like, I don't think I'm going to get to hunt there next year. So even though those aren't the biggest racked bucks, not what I was hoping for on this place, I would probably shoot either one of them just because they're the best deer that I have there. And you know, 4 is not bad as far as age-wise. So yeah, still some hunting to do, even though I only got a couple more weeks to do it. But again, I want to save most of this episode for my West Texas hunt. So yeah, we're going to go ahead and just cut the intro there, and I'm going to get into my hunt out by El Paso right now. All right, guys and girls, so let's go ahead and start from the beginning. And if you listened to last week's episode, you've already heard some of this, but I'm going to start fresh just in case we have some new listeners. So I booked this hunt actually last year, and that's one thing that I learned during this process was if you're wanting to go to like a good quality place, more than likely they're going to be booked at least 1 year, if not 2 years in advance. And so I had actually emailed back and forth with a couple different outfitters, again, kind of first ever like full-on guided hunt, lodging, meals, all that stuff. So did some homework. I found this outfitter that hunts, you know, all over the state of Texas, and went ahead and booked a trip. And when I booked the trip, I was supposed to be hunting on this big ranch in deep South Texas. The ranch actually bordered Big Bend National Park in one spot. So very, very excited about it. Booked the trip, sent my deposit, all that good stuff. And that's what I've been banking on for the last year and a half. So about 6 weeks ago, I get an email from the outfitter, and the ranch that I was supposed to be hunting on sold. He didn't own it. He just leased the hunting rights. And the ranch had sold, and not only had it sold, but they were opening up a pit mine on the property, which is very sad in my opinion. And so he emailed me like, hey, do you just want your money back? Do you want to see if I can find you another spot? You know, what do you want to do? And I was like, hey, if you got somewhere else, like, I'd be open to it. See what you can find, and we'll go from there. So he reached out to some of his other guides and stuff, and he finally found me a spot in far west Texas, almost to El Paso. I mean, you can't get much further west. I was actually, I was about a third of the way across New Mexico, just south between New Mexico and actual Mexico. So just in the very little wedge point of Texas. And so he sent me the ranch and everything in the area. Did a little bit of research real quick and talked to my wife about it. And I was like, man, I've been looking forward to this hunt. You know, I trust this guy. And so I'm going to go ahead and go. So that's what I decided. So yeah, last week I packed up. I felt super weird. I don't think I got to talk about this in the last episode. I packed my truck up with everything I thought I could possibly need, and I called my wife, and I was like, I feel like I'm forgetting something. Like, I'm almost scared, because, like, I just had nothing in my truck. The only thing in the bed of my truck was a cooler, and then in the back seat, I had, like, my rifle, my suitcase, I had my plastic tote of camo, and, like, that was basically it. you know, no camping gear. I took, like, some snacks, but no, like, food or cooking stuff or anything like that. So it was a very weird feeling for, like, going from the DIY to the fully guided thing. It was just a very weird feeling. And so I'd, you know, done some shooting before I went out there. I sighted my rifle in at 200 yards because they said to expect shots from 200 to 400. And so I sighted in at 200. I felt pretty good at 300. I think I mentioned this last week. I honestly was not very comfortable at 400. I've just never really shot that far. In southeast Oklahoma, things are pretty tight, and so I've just never really had a reason to shoot much past 300 yards. And so I was going to play it by ear. You know, if it was a really good setup and calm and everything, I might shoot beyond 300, but I was fully prepared to tell my guide that I, you know, wasn't very comfortable past 300. So headed out. It was a long drive, but I was able to do it in one day. And I had to be out there by 4 p.m. on Wednesday. And so I just woke up super early Wednesday morning, headed out there. Pretty uneventful drive, which was nice. And excuse me again. So I get out there at 4. And the guide was actually out in the field with another hunter. And I thought it was actually like the hunter from the previous week. Turns out it was the other hunter who was going to be hunting along with me. And I had booked a one-on-one. Like, I didn't want to have to share my guide. And so I was a little concerned when I found out that there was another hunter. But come to find out, he was there for a management hunt, and I was there for a trophy hunt. And so we weren't going to be, like, competing against each other. You know, we were going to be hunting together, and basically if we saw a trophy, I would shoot it. If we saw a management, he would shoot it. So, became pretty cool with it, you know, right off the bat. So we had dinner and everything, and then, you know, planned to wake up early the next morning and start our hunt. So real quick, before I go any further, I want to kind of introduce the characters of this story. So, obviously we had myself, I was there hunting, and then my guide's name was Ken, so you'll hear me talking about him a lot. Ken is like your stereotypical small town guy. He knew everybody. He knew who owned every piece of land around, had permission on a lot of different places, running for county commissioner, just like the whole gambit, like just kind of your stereotypical small town guy. And then the other hunter who I really enjoyed, I actually turned out, I was really excited that we got paired together. His name was Mark. He was from Houston, and he actually had not done that much hunting in his life, really. He started hunting kind of later in life. He had done a couple like whitetail hunts in South Texas, like kind of like corporate hunt type things. Like the company he was working for, you know, he got invited to go hunt on some big ranches in South Texas. He had a little bitty, I wouldn't say little bitty. He had a small farm, in East Texas that I think he hog hunted on a little bit. I don't think they really had any deer out there. And then he had gone to Alaska a couple times on bear hunts. And so, you know, he wasn't necessarily inexperienced, but like I said, just kind of a later in life hunter, hadn't really done a ton. And part of the reason he was on the management hunt, kind of like me, like he just wanted to experience mule deer hunting. Like he just wanted to try something new and see what it was about. So the three of us spent a lot of time together over the course of 5 days. One other thing that was just kind of a little different about this hunt than what I'd planned on, the hunt in South Texas was supposed to be a lot more spot and stock. Like it was a big ranch, but it had pretty limited roads. And so it was going to be a lot of, you know, getting out, hiking around, glassing, kind of your typical, you know, mountain mule deer hunt. Like that's kind of what I was after. I just wanted it closer to home. And, you know, Texas, you don't have to worry about drawing tags. It's all over the counter and stuff like that. So it just seemed a lot easier. Well, this hunt, it was, quote, more safari style. And kind of what I figured out was it was basically just like a hog hunt in the daytime in the mountains. So Ken had a four-wheel drive Toyota Tacoma, and we basically just rolled around in that thing pretty much all day long, you know, stopping and glassing, but like not most of the time not even getting out of the truck. Very little hiking. We did a little bit at the end that, you know, I'll get into later, but I related it a lot to like hog hunting back when I was in high school, when we'd just, you know, drive around my grandpa's farm with a spotlight and stuff and get out and shoot hogs, you know, shoot them out the window or whatever. Like that was a lot of what it was. And so, because I used to do that a lot when I was younger, like I was pretty well prepared for that. Poor Mark, not as prepared to, you know, shoot off the mirror or over the hood of the truck, stuff like that. He was an engineer by trade, so I think that was part of it. Like, he just wanted that rock-solid rest, the precision, all that stuff. And it was a little harder on him. But anyway, again, we'll kind of get into that later. So the first day, we wake up early. Ken picks us up, and we head out. And we basically hunted. We hunted a couple different properties, but one of them was right there by his house, and then the others were, I mean, just down the road, not very far, and they all touched each other, so it was one big, you know, congruent thing. But yeah, he had like this little 40-acre piece behind his house, and so a lot of times we'd drive in there and just kind of look, you know, real quickly. Again, you know, it was a small property, like you just kind of drove in there, looked around, left. He didn't even run a camera there. He had a little feed station. But that was it. It was just kind of like, if they were there, cool. If not, let's go on. And, you know, he had a lot of neighbors that hunted. One of the neighbors had like a shooting range. I think he was a police officer. And so he'd come out there on the weekends and just, you know, blast away, practice shooting and stuff like that. So it wasn't like a really good, like he wasn't trying to manage it or anything like that. It was just, you know, sometimes if the wind was right, a buck would show up and cool deal. But for the most part, we hunted this other large ranch that basically had one road that, you know, snaked through it. And he had built this road by himself with a backhoe back in the day. And it was awesome. I mean, it was a pretty solid road. And he had like little, you know, trails that kind of branched off of it. So, you know, if you need to see around a corner or over a ledge, you know, he usually had some kind of little trail to get there. But like I said, it was a lot of just kind of driving around and covering ground. So I think I mentioned that, you know, when I got there, he was out with another hunter, and that turned out to be Mark, the guy who was hunting with me. He had just gotten there a little early, and so they went and just kind of drove around and did some scouting and stuff. And they had actually seen two bucks, and one of them was pretty nice. And it was one of those that was kind of on the borderline between trophy and management. It was a mature buck. I think it was a 5x6. It wasn't real heavy. Wasn't real wide, and so it was one of those things, like, I think if I wanted it, I could shoot it. If I didn't want it, he was going to let Mark shoot it. And Mark made it very clear that like he would be very happy with that buck. And so starting off, we started looking, and he was with a smaller like 2x2 or something. So starting off, we went and we looked for those deer, couldn't find them. We drove around. We ended up spotting a different 2x2 with 5 does who was he was like an older, mature deer, but just again, just not very big. And I will say, I'll give this to Ken and just the whole service. Like, if you book a management hunt with them, you're still going to get a pretty nice deer. Like that 2x2, he needed to be shot. Like he was never going to be big. He was never going to be a trophy, but like he wanted a better buck for Mark. And so that's why he didn't shoot it. Even though like by anyone's standards, that would be a management buck. But anyway, so he's just like, you know, first morning, let's leave that guy. Let's keep looking. So, we keep going and we just like, we immediately start seeing Awdad everywhere, which, you know, I've seen pictures of Awdad. I know what they are. I'm somewhat familiar with them. But like when I say everywhere, I mean everywhere. I bet the first day, I bet we saw over 200. I mean, they'd be in, I don't know what you call them, herds, I guess. They'd be in herds of like 50. We'd see 30. I mean, and just everywhere. And almost always, they were at like the very tippy top. And I'm going to call these mountains. I think, I don't know, my buddies in Idaho would probably laugh at me for calling these mountains. But, I mean, they're big. You know, they're obviously like, I think sea level wise, we were at like 5,000 feet. These mountains were probably, you know, 1,000, maybe a little bit higher than that. So you get up, you know, you might be able to get up over 6,000 feet. So nothing crazy, but pretty big. It's not something you're just going to like walk up casually, you know? So we're seeing goats all over the place. Awdad, technically, or, you know, the other name for him is Barbary sheep. He called them goats. I think they're technically a goat. So I'm going to probably refer to them as goats because that's what he called them. So we're seeing these suckers everywhere. And then he also, I think he had 4 or 5 feeders, and the way they bait out there, and I think I'd heard this before, you're not really supposed to feed mule deer corn or like grain. Like they have a little bit different stomach than a whitetail. And it can be really bad. Like I think if you feed them corn and then like you stop, their stomach, the enzymes like need more time to change. And so they'll basically like, basically starve to death if you just like cut off the grain. And so he didn't feed straight corn. He fed protein and then he fed alfalfa bales. And so most of the spots he would just throw like a little square bale out. He had 2 kind of his main locations that were on each side of the range. And he, like on that first day, he had his son-in-law run to town and he bought like one of the big 1-ton square bales. And so he put half on one side, half on the other side. And he told us, he's like, man, he's like, these goats are like eating me alive. Or not eating him alive, eating the, you know, all the hay and stuff. And he's like, y'all watch, like tomorrow that bale will be gone. Which I was like, okay, you're exaggerating. But sure enough, when we made our round the next morning, those bales were completely gone. You know, they ate $200 plus of hay in one night. And, you know, he'd have cameras on him and stuff, and you might see a few, like, does up there, but, you know, I already said, like, this was kind of almost like a hog hunting style. These goats were just like hogs. Like, they came in, they swarmed these bales, and they ate all these bales literally in one night. He said, I asked him about, I was like, you know, do they rut kind of like deer, or how does their breeding work? They breed twice a year. And it is kind of like deer-esque, like they do it a certain time of year. I want to say they do it in like October and March, if I remember right. But yeah, so they breed twice a year. So also, you know, a little bit like hogs. So it was pretty amazing to watch these suckers and just what they were surviving on. Like, you know, other than what he was feeding, I mean, there was no grass or anything like that. It was either a yucca or some type of cactus. You know, there's like 3 or 4 different types of cactus. Excuse me. But no grass. Like, these things are basically just eating yuccas and cactus And then if he put hay out, cool, they'd eat some hay. So like I said, we're just seeing goat after goat or herd after herd. We get around kind of one of his main feeding stations, and he's like, I have a little family group of does that hangs around here. He called them his babies, and we go up over the hill, and sure enough, all of a sudden the doe pops up, and there was 9 of them, and like every time we drove by there, we'd find these 9 does, and he'd roll down his window and like call to them and stuff, and you know, they weren't very spooky of him or scared of him. So we do the whole loop, you know, through the property that morning. And on the backside, it didn't touch a road, but he had an easement through a neighbor to get out back out to the highway so that he didn't just have to, you know, turn around and go back through the whole thing. Because it took like 3 to 4 hours to drive through this thing. I mean, just it was so big and rough and rocky, and you were climbing over mountains. And so we were on his easement headed out towards the highway, and I spotted a buck off to the left. And I, you know, yelled, buck, 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 and he pulls up the binoculars, and we look at it, and it was a management deer. It was, again, fairly mature, not necessarily small, but not huge. But the main thing was it looked like a whitetail. Like, it didn't have your typical, like, forks and stuff. And like, luckily, I didn't mention it to him, but I thought about mentioning to him. Like, that's what I was, like, I wanted a mule deer that looked like a mule deer. Because I knew a lot of the deer in this area and in Texas in general, because they probably have a little whitetail in them, can look like whitetail and have more of a whitetail looking rack. And I wanted a mule deer that people looked at and were like, yes, that is a mule deer. And so, you know, he knew that. I'm sure I wasn't the first person to think that. And so the buck was actually headed, you know, towards his property that he could hunt. And so he told Mark, he's like, hey, you know, that thing makes it over there and we see it, like, that'd be a great one for you to shoot. Mark, you know, saw it through his binoculars. He's like, hey, I'd be happy with that. And so it was cool. So first run through the property, I think we had seen 2 or 3 bucks, you know, 2 different groups of does. And so it was pretty promising. Like, I was feeling good. The one bad thing was for the first probably day and a half, almost full 2 days, the wind was howling. Like, sustained 20 miles per hour with gust up to like 35. And so he had kind of warned us. He's like, hey, he's like, I'll tell y'all right now, like, finding deer right now is going to be tough. And if we see them, they're going to be on the backside of the mountain towards the top trying to get out of that wind. And sure enough, every deer we saw, that was exactly where they were. So it also gave me some confidence in him. I was like, all right, you know, this guy knows what he's talking about. Like, this isn't his first rodeo. He had been guiding for, I think, 20 years. So he definitely knew what he was doing. So that was kind of the game plan. So in the morning, we would do the loop and we'd go north to south. And then in the afternoon, we'd go back out and we'd go south to north. And like I said, that was just kind of what we did. We'd usually go back to the house for lunch. We'd get back about 11. We'd head back out about 2. So, you know, we'd have time to eat and take a little nap, rest, whatever we needed to do. And he would usually, you know, have some stuff to do in the middle of the day, whether it be filling water or going out and putting out feed, whatever it was. He had his son-in-law helping him. And that's another thing. Water is like basically an attractant, you know, because it's so dry out there. And so at most of his feeding locations, he also had a water tank. And usually he'd have like almost like a small little like dog bowl automatic waterer. And he'd have just a big tank next to it. He had a 300-gallon trailer or tank on a trailer. And so they'd fill the water tank, and they'd drive out there, fill the big tank, and it'd just gravity flow down to the little water trough. So that was another way that they were, you know, attracting animals. So I'm not going to do a complete play-by-play of every day because there's really no need. But basically, like I said, every morning we'd do the loop one way, in the evening we'd do the loop the other way. And the first 2 days, the wind was killing us. The afternoon of the second day, it died down some, but still not a ton. It was still blowing like 12, something like that, which isn't crazy, but just still not what we were wanting. But we had put a lot of eggs into the third day, which was Saturday, because the wind was supposed to die down completely. It was supposed to be the coldest morning yet. and the wind was also shifting from the east to the west, and so we were like, man, like, it's going to be cool. That could get the animals moving. We're going to have a wind shift. That could get the animals moving. The winds died down. That could get the animals moving. So just, like, a lot of things were kind of stacking in our favor. And so we woke up on Saturday, a lot of hope in the air, and we were just feeling really good about it. So we take off, and as usual, the first place we check out is the little, like, 40-acre place behind his house. And so we're driving in, and all of a sudden, I just hear him say, like, they're there. And so, he pulls up a little closer. He shuts the truck off. We roll the windows down. We start glassing. And we're just seeing deer everywhere. And it's like buck, 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 doe, buck, doe, doe. And there's a group of, I think there was eight. I know there was five bucks, and there was three or four does. And so, I mean, we're just going like buck to buck, trying to figure out what these things are. We're getting excited. My heart's pumping. but there's nothing in there. There's definitely nothing in there like trophy quality. And I figured that out right away. There was one 2x2 that actually got me more excited than any of the rest, even though most of them had more points, because this thing was just a tank. I mean, you could tell he was old. He was mature. Even though he was just a 2x2, I mean, he was outside his ears. I'm going to say he was probably 24 inches wide, something like that, and pretty heavy. Not a high-scoring deer, but just like I said, a tank. And, like, if y'all know me, like, I just love big, mature bucks. And so, even though I was pretty sure I wasn't going to shoot him at this point in the trip, in the back of my mind, I'm like, hey, you know, last day, like, that sucker's going down. Mark, again, he's on the management hunt, and so we're, like, getting pretty excited for Mark, like, hey, one of these could work. So we're glassing around, and there was one pretty wide. He was young-ish. You know, he was probably, like, a three-year-old, but he was outside his ears. I think he was a 3x2. So, again, nothing real special, kind of thin. And our guide, he, credit to him, like, he really wanted Mark to shoot something bigger and nicer. But Mark, he wasn't real picky, you know, he kept saying, he's like, I just want a good representation of the species. Like, that's what he kept saying over and over again. And so he's looking through his binoculars, and I can just tell, like, his mouth is watering. Like, he likes this thing. So he's asking Ken. Ken and him are going back and forth, and Ken's like, he's like, I mean, you can shoot it, but he's like, don't give up on me yet. It's like, today's the day. You know, like, these are the conditions we've been waiting for. We haven't even made it to the big property yet. He's like, I think these things will stay here. And so he's trying to kind of talk Mark off the ledge, and Mark's like, you know, I'd love to have something bigger, but I think I'd be happy with this. And so they're kind of in this stalemate. And eventually Ken convinces Mark to wait. And so Mark's like, all right, I'll trust you. And so, and we'd also kind of talked to Ken that the evening before at dinner about the whole mule deer for Audad exchange. Like, hey, if we're not seeing any mule deer, because again, it'd been 2 days and we hadn't really seen anything shoot worthy, like, could we take an Audad instead? And he confirmed that. He's like, yeah. He's like, I have so many of these Audad. If we don't find, you know, a buck that y'all want, y'all can shoot a goat. And so that was also kind of playing in Mark's mind. He's like, sure, that's an okay deer, but I could also shoot an Audad, worst case. So we ended up backing out and leaving those bucks alone. So we head over to the main property. Again, like, super high hopes. Like, we're like, this is it. Like, we're going to find the monster. They're just going to be deer running everywhere. We get over there, and I think we actually ended up seeing less deer that day than any other day. We did find the babies, you know, the 9 does, but I want to say those are the only other deer we saw at the main property. So, kind of a bummer. There was a moment in the afternoon that we topped this ridge, and we popped up, and there's just a group of Audad right in front of us. There's like 30 of them, and like 100 yards away, and there was one pretty nice goat in there. And so I start kind of to grab my rifle and stuff, and our guide is like, whoa, what are you doing? And I was like, man, like, that's a pretty good one. And, like, I mean, he's right there. Like, he, you know, he's not uphill. Like, we're even with him, 100 yards. And he's like, man, that's a baby. He's like, don't shoot that one. I was like, a baby? Like, look at this thing. And he's like, we can do better. We can do better. And so I was like, all right, man, like, I'll trust you. I was like, you know, we're day three. I only got one day left. Great opportunity. And he's like, nah, he's like, don't shoot that one. So I was like, okay. So, so yeah, day three goes by again, pretty uneventful. We stopped by the little 40-acre piece on the way back, didn't find any of those bucks or any other deer in there. So we backed out and headed to the house. And so we're eating dinner. We got one day left. And so, you know, Mark and I are both kind of, we're starting to feel the ants a little bit. And again, like, I hadn't really, it was so cool. Like, any hunt that has like a consolation prize is definitely okay in my book. And I had been texting a few of my buddies, like, you know, about all these Awdad and how I could shoot one if we didn't find a deer. And they're like, man, why haven't you shot one? And yeah, I sent them some pictures of some good ones. They're like, man, like, why didn't you take that one? And I was like, I don't think y'all understand. Like it's not going to be that big of a challenge to get one of these suckers if I want to. And so I was holding off. And so, you know, we're talking at dinner that night, and Ken starts asking me about Oklahoma and bucks, and come to find out, like, you know, they don't have whitetail where they're at. It's all mule deer. And so I start showing him some trail camera videos and stuff like that. And y'all know me, like, I'm not afraid to strike a deal. And so I'm talking to him. And I'm like, hey, man, how about this? I was like, you said if I can't find a mule deer that I can shoot an odd at, right? He's like, yeah, right. I was like, I tell you what. I was like, if I end up getting both, if I can shoot an odd at and a mule deer, you can come hunt with me in Oklahoma. And he's like, man, deal. And he shook my hand right there. His wife, Becca, who had done a lot of the cooking for us, she overheard. She's a hunter. And she's like, hey, can I come? And I was like, sure, why not? And he's like, hey, man, like, if she can just, like, shoot a doe, that's fine. I was like, yeah, come shoot a doe. I don't care. And so we made that deal that night going into day four. And so now in the back of my mind, I was like, man, I can shoot both if I want to. And again, like, you know, this is not a super cheap hunt. And even if you just go for an Awdad, like, it's about the same price or may even be the same price as the mule deer hunt. And so I was like, man, like, you know, like, technically my deer are free. I mean, like, yes, they're on our property, and the property, you got to pay for the property, but it's not like I'm out there paying per whitetail that I have. And so I was like, hey, I'll do this all day long. And so anyway, so we head out for day four. Again, super high hopes. The conditions are pretty good. The only kind of downside is the wind was supposed to basically start blowing a little bit harder all day long. So it was going to be calm in the morning. But then by the time evening rolled around, the wind was going to be blowing pretty good. And that kind of scared Mark and I a little bit because we had seen the first 2 days, like, what those high winds can do, just kind of shut down deer movement. So we were, I would say, a little nervous. And so Mark had made up his mind. He's like, hey, he's like, if we can find that 3x2 we found the day before, he's like, I'm shooting it. And so first thing, you know, we head back into the little 40. And nothing, not a single deer. And again, it's the weekend by now. And like I said, you know, it's a small piece. There's neighbors all the way around it. So for all we knew, they were hunting, they were baiting, they were shooting. And so, like, who knows what happened to these deer. So we go in there, like I said, nothing. We back out. And as we're kind of driving out of there, he's like, John, hear me out. He's like, what if we go right now and try to get you a goat? And then he's like, we won't go back for lunch. We'll stay out all day long, and we'll just concentrate on mule deer. I was like, hey, man, like, that works for me. So we head over to the main property, and we had seen a group the day before, not the group that was up on top. We had seen a different group that had one in there that was pretty dang nice, really nice, actually. And we had seen several nice goats throughout this thing. And so for those of you who don't know much about mule deer, about Awdad, I should probably explain this a little bit. So, they are native to North Africa. They're running loose in Texas, and there are actually now more in Texas than there are in North Africa. And it's kind of funny. Somebody asked me if they were invasive, and they're not necessarily categorized as an invasive. They're called an exotic. But from what I saw, they're getting pretty close to that invasive line. Like I said, I mean, we saw hundreds of them. They reproduce quickly. They're eating everything. From what I saw, I think they're kind of running the mule deer off. So they're getting close to that invasive line. But they're like a goat antelope. Apparently, according to Ken, they can get up to like 600 pounds. And the way you measure them is you start at the base of their skull, wherever the horns come in, and you measure them back to the tips. And so like a good Audad is probably considered like 26 to 28 inches, somewhere in there, again, from skull all the way back to the tip. It's considered a trophy Audad if it's over 30 inches. And then kind of like a 30-inch Audad would probably be like a 170 whitetail, you know, kind of getting into that Booner range. And then, you know, every inch on an Audad after that would probably be like 10 inches on a whitetail. So, you know, 31 would be like kind of a 170 or 180, you know, somewhere in there, and so on and so forth. And so Ken's goal, like he doesn't want to shoot anything under 30 if he has a trophy hunter. And so that's kind of what we were after. The one that I wanted to shoot the day before, he was probably in the 28-inch range, which again, like, I don't know that much about Audad. You know, I know what they are, but I've never hunted them. I've never killed one. So like, I'm not super picky. You know, like if it's your first time deer hunting, you know, 120-inch deer is going to be awesome and huge and big. And like, you're going to be super excited about it, you know? Whereas if you've been hunting a while, you might want to hold out for the 140, 150, 160, whatever. So I was still in that 120 range. And so we get to the main property, and we're kind of glassing as we go in for goats, but we kind of had that one that we saw the day before that he said was a good one. So we are looking for mule deer, and I will say, like, we were going through much more methodical on day four. Like, he was really trying, and he was using his little trails. Like, he was looking in places we hadn't looked. Like, he wanted us to get a deer. He was working for us. And so we're working our way back, and we finally get back to the area where we had seen the good one the day before, and we top over a hill, and we see a group of Audad across a canyon on top, basically on the next mountain over. So we're glassing, and he's like, John, there he is. He's like, look to the far right. So I pull up my binoculars, and I look over, and I see him. And this thing is, like, noticeably bigger than the other goats around him. And so he has range-finding binoculars, which are super nice. I kind of want some now. And he's like, man, he's just over 300. So I'm like, all right, like, that's far, but, you know, I'll try it. Let's see if we can get set up. So I grabbed my rifle, which had been riding around the truck with us for 4 days, in the cab. We just didn't have one in the chamber. I grab it, and I pull it out of the truck, and I have a bipod on the rifle with the strap, you know, attached to the bipod. And I don't know if it caught or if it had just been jostled while we were driving around or what, but I pull my rifle out, and my bipod and strap drop to the ground. I'm like, crap. So I pick it up, and I'm trying to get it back on, and as I'm, like, unscrewing the little deal, a piece of my bipod literally falls on the ground. And I'm like, well, crap, so that's worthless. So I get back in the truck, and I grab my pack and my coat, and I run up to the ledge, and I throw my pack down, put my coat on top of it, and meanwhile, they've caught on to us, they see the motion, they start working off, and I get my rifle set up on my pack, and he's telling me, you know, 310, 320, 330, 340, and when he says 340, the big one, he's standing, like, he's skyline, he's at the top. And he stops, and he turns broadside, and I'm trying to find him in my scope. I have my scope zoomed in, and I can see him, but I can't see him. Like, because I don't have my bipod on, I can't get up above the vegetation that's in front of me. You know, there's yuccas and cactus and everything. So, like, I can kind of see his horns. I can kind of see his back, but I'm basically looking through a yucca plant, and it's not clear, and as I'm looking through my scope, I see him go over the other side and out of my life. And I internally, I am furious. I was like, you stupid, stinking bipod. Like, why did you have to fall off now? I was like, just my luck. It's the last stinking day. what on earth? Like, what are you doing to me? I was like, this is the luck I've been having all stinking year long. Like, nothing is going my way. You know, the buck in Kansas, the rain when I was at McAllister, just the bad weather we've been having here in Oklahoma, and just nothing has gone my way. And so I'm super frustrated. Luckily, I find the piece to my bipod laying on the ground. I pick it up. I get back in the back seat, and I untatch my sling, and I borrow a screwdriver from Ken, and I'm trying to pry everything apart and, like, undo the spring and everything, and I still don't know what happened. Again, I don't know if, like, the strap caught on the seat or something and pulled it off, or if something had hit it when we went in for lunch or something like that. I don't know. All I knew is it fell off. And so I do some, you know, redneck engineering, get it put back together, get it on my gun, and it seems solid. I make this because we've just been driving around, not really hiking, I just take the strap off. That way there's nothing to catch or pull on it or anything like that. And Ken's like, hey, I think we can find them on the other side. Luckily, we were kind of in, like, the center of the property. And so we keep driving, and he's kind of glassing along the way a little bit from mule deer, but, like, our main goal now is these goats. And so we have to go, like, you know, around and down and up and over the mountains and stuff. And we finally, we get on one of his little trails to go in between these two pretty dadgum steep hillside, so we're kind of like almost like a box canyon type thing, super steep on each side, and we're looking to the left because that's the ledge they had gone over. And so he's like, you know, I think they'll just, you know, they're not hard spooked, we didn't shoot or anything, I think they'll just kind of go over the top and hang out. And so we're driving along, creeping along, we're looking up to the left, not seeing anything, and then all of a sudden I see him look to the right, and he's like, there they are. And so these suckers had already gone over the top, down the entire mountain, crossed the valley, and were going up the other side. And so we throw our glass up. He's like, that's them. He's on the right. And so he's like, hey, just use the back of the truck. And so I get out, and he had like a toolbox, not like a truck toolbox. He just had like a loose toolbox that was about the same height as the bed in the back of the truck, just like bungee corded there. So I put my bipod down, and I put the legs on the toolbox, and then I rest the butt of the gun on the bed. But, you know, the rifle's still pretty dang flat, and these things are, like, way the heck up high. And I asked him, I was like, hey, what's the range? And he's like, oh, probably, like, 200. I was like, oh, perfect. I had my gun sighted in at 200, but I'm trying to figure out, like, how the heck I'm supposed to shoot, like, so straight up. And so I start sliding my rifle back, like, closer to the edge, and finally I'm at the point to where my bipod is still on the toolbox, but, like, my gun is resting on the bed, probably only, like, 6 to 8 inches behind the bipod. So if you can picture that in your head, the barrel of that gun is pointing really high up. And so I get up there, I plant my foot in the dirt, and I look through my scope. And I see the goats, and I'm looking, and I find the one, I zoom in, and I'm, like, rock solid on this truck bed. I was like, man, like, this can't get much better. And so he's like, hey, you know, he's on the bottom right, blah, blah, blah. I find him, I'm on him, and he had told us, like, on an oddad, you shoot further forward. You go straight through the shoulder. Like, their vitals are further forward. And these animals are tough. Like, they are known for soaking up lead. And so he just been stressing, you know, once we kind of turned it into a goat hunt, he's like, I can't stress this enough. You got to go straight through the shoulder. And, you know, once you shoot, reload, because more than likely you're going to need a follow-up shot, if not multiple. So I'm rock solid. I feel good. I'm zoomed into 12, got the scope on him and everything. And I go, and I hold my breath. I pull the trigger, and nothing. And I had racked around in all the rush and everything. I'd racked around, but I still had the gun on safety. So I was like, frick. So slide the safety forward. And now I got to find him again because I had moved the gun. And again, they're starting to move off at this point. And so he had jumped up another ledge. And so I get him in my scope, and I'm centering him up. And he's like, wait. And I see a ewe, like, run in front of him, you know, through my crosshairs. And he's like, okay, now you're clear. And so, still feeling solid, he'd moved up a little higher, hold my breath, squeeze the trigger, pow! And of course, you know, the gun jumps and moves. And so I look up and I just see him tumbling and rolling. And Ken's like, "Oh, you hit him perfect." And he's like, he's down. So I rack another round in and I'm trying to like find him in the scope again for a follow-up shot. And Ken's like, "Hey man, you're good." And so I look up and I look up just in time to kind of make his final roll, and his belly ends up like straight up in the air, and his horns catch to where his face is straight up in the air, and he's down. And I ended up making a perfect shot somehow in all that excitement. The bullet just clipped his heart and took out both lungs. So, I mean, he was dead on impact. So super awesome. I haven't shaken like that in such a long time. Just it happened. Luckily, I think I was actually glad that it happened fast. I feel like I say that a lot when it happens with whitetails, because you don't have time to think, like your mind doesn't race. And kind of just your instincts kicked in, like all the practice you did like pays off in that moment, and you just do what you're supposed to do. You don't have time to overthink it and overcorrect and all that stuff. So yeah, he ended up being 196 yards straight uphill when I shot. So we high five, we shake hands, and then the work sets in. You know, he rolled down a little bit, but not much. And so the three of us take off. We hike straight up this hill. And again, like, you know, it's 200 yards as the, you know, direct sight. But, you know, by the time you kind of go up, and he was on top of like a pretty good ledge. And so we hike up there. And I mean, I wouldn't say we were rock climbing necessarily, but we were pretty close to it. Like, we weren't quite to the point where we needed like a rope and a pulley, but we were pretty darn close. It was a little sketchy. So we get up there to him. He's not moving, and so we roll him down, get him in a good spot, take some pictures. And one of the funny things, so we take some pictures, and then we go ahead and gut him. And Ken was like, "Hey," he's like, I know y'all want to help me drag him and stuff." He's like, "Let me do it." He's like, "I don't want y'all to fall or break your leg or whatever." He's like, "Just let me drag him." So we're like, "All right." So I grabbed his coat for him to carry it and the knife, and I have my coat and stuff, and Mark's up there with us. And I kid you not, he drags this thing up to that ledge I was just talking about and just goes, "Yeah!" literally throws this thing off the ledge, and he hits and starts rolling down the mountain. I'm kind of like, and he looks around and he looks at me and he's like, "Oh, he'll be fine. We do this all the time." He's like, "They're tough." And sure enough, I mean, he was fine. He didn't break off or anything, but I was a little shocked there in the moment. So we get him down, we drag him all the way to the truck, get him loaded up, and he's like, "All right, now let's go find some deer." I'm like, "Heck stinking yeah, man. Like, what a hunt. Like, this is awesome." So we load up and take off, and I was sitting in the back seat, and I'm on cloud nine. I'm like, "Man, like, I got something. I'm not going home empty-handed. Like, I can die happy." Not necessarily that far, but I was feeling good. And Mark's up in the front. Mark was like 6'3" at least, if not 6'4". Older gentleman. And so I was like, "Hey, Mark, like, you take shotgun. Like, me and my little legs, we'll climb in the back." So we take off, and I kind of was too, but I think Mark kind of got a sense of like, okay, like, it's my turn, you know, like, it, like, let's do this. And again, like, yes, I wanted to buck, but I was pretty dang happy. Like, I wanted Mark to get something too. Just a great guy, team player. He was fun to hang out with. So I was rooting for Mark also. And so we're driving along, and again, like, Ken's doing a good job of picking things apart. We're going a little bit slower. He's glassing like crazy. Like I said earlier, like, he's working for us. And so we kind of turned around. We're headed back up towards the front. Again, like, our plan was to stay out all day long this last day. And so we're driving along, and we come around a corner, and we spot the 2x2 and the little group of does that we had seen the very first day. And so, you know, we come around the corner, and Mark had already kind of mentioned, like, "Hey, if we find them again, like, I'd be fine with the 2x2. Because, you know, he was kind of like me. He's like, "I just don't want to go home empty-handed. Like, I'd rather shoot a smaller buck than nothing at all." And so we come around the corner, and we spot the 2x2, And so Mark's like, hey, like, do you mind if I shoot it? And Ken's like, hey, like, I don't care. I mean, I think we can do better, but if you're happy with that, go ahead. And so, so again, like I said, you know, it's kind of a spur in the moment. We're in the truck. And so Ken's like, see if you can just kind of crack your door and maybe shove a jacket, you know, kind of in the V between the door and the cab and use that as a rest. And so Mark tries that and he's not feeling comfortable. And again, like by this point, you know, the deer are kind of onto us and they're working away. And Mark's like, I really want to get in the bed. He had tried it when we were at the house. He's like, I really want to get in the bed and use the top of the cab, my bipod, and use my pack to rest the back of my gun on and all this. And so, you know, Ken's like, you know, you can try it, but you may bust them. And so, you know, he climbs out and he first off, I feel bad for the guy, but he slams his door pretty darn hard. So then the deer are really kind of getting alert. And then he climbs in the back of the pickup. And again, he's 6'4", so, you know, he's kind of up there in the open. And, you know, he's trying to get his bipod attached because it had like a quick connect type thing. So he's trying to get his bipod attached and he slams his pack down on the cab and he's trying to get settled and rest. And you know, it just takes too long. And so by the time he gets, you know, finally ready to shoot, they had worked over the ridge and were gone. And so, so he climbs back down, he gets in the cab and Ken was like, hey, like, I don't want to spook him again. He's like, let's just sit here for a minute, kind of let him settle down. Then we'll drive up there and see if we can find him. And so we sit there for a minute and then, you know, we take off and we come over the hill and we're not finding them. And he's like, I don't know if they went left or right or whatever. And we're glassing and we can't find them. And so understandably, Mark, you know, he starts to get, it just, his tone changed a little bit, you know, and I'm not sure if it was frustration at Ken or frustration at himself for not being more prepared. I'm not sure, but you could just tell he was disappointed, you know, like he felt like he missed maybe his last opportunity. And so we give it some time, we glass, we can't find him. And so we keep going. And I mean, not 5 minutes later, we top another little hill and there's some Audad right there. And so again, you know, Mark immediately jumps out and we're glassing and there's one like pretty decent one, but not great. And I think it was one that Ken kind of wanted to let live because it could be a trophy in the future. You know, obviously Mark would have been more than happy to shoot it. And so, not that Ken's like discouraging him, but he's not necessarily helping him either. And Mark's trying to get ready and he's asking, you know, like, can I shoot it? And you know, it was in the midst of some other ewes and stuff. And we didn't want to shoot a ewe. And, you know, kind of by the time we kind of got everything sorted out, they had also made it over the ridge and gone out of sight and stuff. And so Mark gets back in and now there's some awkwardness. You know, I'm out of it a little bit. You know, it's not really between me and either of them, but you could tell Mark was a little frustrated for sure with Ken. At this moment, you know, we're kind of around lunchtime now on the last day. And I also started kind of get the feeling, and I think Mark picked up on it too, Ken was a lot more invested in getting me a deer than he was getting Mark a deer. And I think it was kind of twofold. You know, like, again, and I feel very spoiled saying this, but I was technically the trophy hunter, and so he was trying to find me a trophy buck. You know, I had paid a little bit more money than Mark had. I think selfishly, he was also probably thinking about himself and his whitetail hunt a little bit. And you know, Mark was there at dinner. He knew about the deal. You know, he had been laughing and joking and talking with us. And so for the next hour or so, things were a little tense. And again, like I'm still pretty happy in the back seat. I got my Audad. It's like, hey, if I get a buck, awesome. If not, like I'm cool with it. I'm pretty happy. But again, Mark was feeling the pressure, and I think he was just feeling maybe a little underappreciated, mistreated. You know, I don't think he felt like he was kind of getting his money worth. Which, again, I understood. I get it. You know, like I kind of picked up, like, I felt like Ken was catering to me a little bit, and I know Mark picked that up too. So we kind of get to the front of the property, and again, our plan had been to stay out all day long. Well, we get to the front, and Mark was like, hey, you know, since we're this close, what if we go check the 40 again, where we had seen all the bucks the day before? And so, Ken actually asked me if that was okay, which I felt super awkward, and I'm a people pleaser and stuff, and I was like, yeah, like, let's go for it. And I was like, honestly, you know, if he wants to shoot that 2x3, like, you know, if the opportunity arises, you know, last day, like, I'd be pretty happy shooting that super old 2x2. And so Ken was like, all right. And so we drive over there, and we drive back into the bowl, and nothing there. Not a single deer. And again, this is like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, so I wasn't super hopeful anyway. So since we were so close to the house, we end up just running up there real quick. We unloaded my Awdad, put it in a trailer that he had, and yeah, we stopped real quick, used the bathroom. I made myself a peanut butter sandwich or two, actually. And we loaded back up, and we took off again. Well, while we were at the house, we went ahead and picked up Ken's son-in-law, Nick, so that he could come help us. And so all four of us are in the truck now, and we're making our rounds. We're going, and, you know, we still haven't seen any deer. And so we go up, and we go to this one, like, pretty high point, and the wind was out of the west this day. And it just so happened, kind of on the eastern side of the ridge, Ken had seen, about 2 weeks before, Ken had seen a really big mule deer buck. And he had shown us some pictures of it. Like, it was legitimate, a trophy, you know, what I was after. It was wide, big forks, everything. Well, it was on the east side of the mountain range that you couldn't see from the road. And so we get up to this high point, and Ken puts it in park, and he sits there for a second, and he's like, John, he's like, do you want to go for a hike? And I'm kind of like, you know, what do you mean? Like, you know, he didn't give me any context. And he's like, we can take this trail, we can follow this ridge, and we can get to the backside of these mountains that we haven't been able to see. And, you know, that's on the opposite side of the wind. You know, that big buck could be over there just hiding from us this whole time, just out of range. He's like, we can follow the ridge, and if we don't see him, we'll just hike down to the bottom. They can go around. They can try to get Mark a goat, and they can pick us up at the road. And so I was like, heck yeah, like, let's do it. Honestly, that's kind of what I was wanting to do on this trip anyway. It was more of a spot and stock. And so we're getting out, and he's like, hey, Nick, like, jump in the driver's seat. He's like, Mark, Nick's going to take you. He's like, that group we saw earlier, he's like, I know they're going to be down at this feeder. You know, they were headed that direction. He's like, Nick, drive to this spot. Y'all park here. You can walk up to the feeder from there. I think the goats will be there. And he was like, Mark, shoot whatever you want. He's like, I don't care, big, small, whatever. He's like, shoot whatever. Which was awesome for Mark. But again, I think he was checking out a little bit on Mark. I think he was more concerned about me. But honestly, it kind of worked out in Mark's favor. So I get my pack. And Ken, by the way, he's a man by all senses of the mean or means of the sense, whatever that saying is. He did most of his hunting in Crocs, jean shorts, and like a long button down shirt. And it was fairly cold. I mean, it got down into the 30s a couple times, and he was still in his shorts and Crocs. He did keep a pair of boots in the truck in case, like when I shot my goat and we had to hike up the mountain, he did throw his boots on. But for the most part, he was in Crocs and shorts. And so we get out, and I throw a couple waters in my pack, and he's like, you got knives and stuff? I was like, yeah, I got it. He's like, all right, sweet. So he puts his long-sleeve shirt on. It's like an old Carhartt shirt that's, like, barely insulated. And the wind was howling at this point. I think I told y'all earlier, like, the wind was supposed to gradually get higher and higher all day long. So the wind's probably up at 17, 18. I want to say it was right around 50 degrees. So, I mean, with the wind, you're talking probably a wind chill of like 40. So I got all my layers on and stuff. He's there in his short boots, jean shorts, and a long-sleeve shirt. And we take off hiking. And so we're following the top of the ridge. And I mean, we're just going one bowl at a time because we could see both off both sides of this ridge. So we'd hike up to one bowl, we'd glass it real good, nothing. We'd hike up to the next bowl, glass it real good, hike to the next bowl, glass it, and we're glassing across and everything. And it wasn't a terrible hike. I'd say all said and done, we probably did 2 miles. And luckily it was downhill, not uphill. And so we're just staying on top. We glass a couple different bowls. We glass the far side. And he's like, man, he's like, I don't know where that sucker is. And I was like, hey, I get it. Like, it's hunting, you know, whatever. And I think he knew it. He just wasn't going to say it. I realized it by the end of the hunt. I think he just honestly had so many awdad that they basically ran the deer off. I mean, like I said, you know, when he would put hay out, they would eat it. They would come to the feeders. They'd eat the feed. They were drinking out of the water bowls. And, you know, I really compare them to hogs. Just like with hogs and whitetails, like, they're not necessarily scared of the hogs, but they also don't want to mess with them. And when a whitetail's at a feeder and a hog comes up, the whitetail leaves and the hog takes over. Well, same thing when a mule deer's at a feeder or hay or water or whatever, and the awdad come, he just kind of gives it to him and leaves. And so I think the mule deer had kind of moved off to the flats and the awdad had just taken over the high ground. So we finish our hike and we unfortunately had to hike down, which is not as easy as it sounds, because I don't know if I mentioned this or yet, there is no grass where we're at. Like, everything is either a yucca or like one of 3 or 4 different cactus species. Zero grass whatsoever. So we're hiking down, and it's not quite like shale rock, but I mean, it's all rock. There's a lot of loose rocks, and then you're also trying to dodge, you know, cactuses and stuff on the way down. So we eventually work our way down to the creek bed, and then we just follow the creek bed out to the road. Well, as we're hiking down, we hear a shot, and it's close, and we're like, sweet, like, that had to have been Mark. And so I'm praying, I'm like, dear Lord, please let Mark have got something, because I was going to feel so, like, I'm not used to people, like, catering to me, and I was going to feel so bad if Ken bent over backwards for me, and then Mark had to walk home, you know, empty-handed. So, like I said, we made it down to the creek, we finish our hike, we make it out to the road, we get to a water tank that he had told Nick to meet us by, and we had beat them there, and which we weren't. I wouldn't say we weren't expecting, but we figured they would be there about the same time we would be. And so we're there, and we're waiting, and they're not showing up. And I'd be lying if a little piece in the back of my mind was like, man, we're wasting a little bit of my hunting time. But what was mostly on my mind was like, I feel like it shouldn't have taken them this long. And so I was afraid one of two things: either that Mark had missed and they were, you know, trying to go after him, or, you know, probably even worse, that he had hit one but not made a good shot and they were, you know, blood trailing one. Neither one of them was really, you know, ideal. And we knew that was their shot, like, just kind of the direction it came from, how close it was, like, there was no doubt that was their shot. And so we're sitting there, and, you know, Ken and I are talking, and we finally hear a vehicle coming, and they pull up, and Nick's like, oh, no luck, like, y'all didn't find him, like, they're asking us questions when we want to ask them questions. So I finally just walk to the back of the truck, and sure enough, I see a goat in the back, and I'm like, oh, thank you, Jesus. And Mark, you know, he was back to his normal mood, he was happy as could be. And sure enough, it was just like Ken had said, you know, they parked where they were supposed to, they walked up, the goats were there at the feeder, and they had backed up, and Mark got his dream. He climbed up into the back of the truck and got his pack ready and everything, and they got set, and then Nick had just rolled forward in the truck and on the goats, and Mark was able to, you know, shoot off the truck nice and steady and stuff. And had gotten his goat, and I was super happy for him, and so you know, it's almost dark by this time, so we shake hands and everything, we're excited, we're checking out the goat, and we get back in the truck, and we start rolling, And there's probably, I'm going to say like 45 minutes of light left. And so mentally, I'm like, you know, the hunt's pretty much done. Like it's the last day. Within the last hour, we're not on anything. We don't really have a lead on anything. And we're heading back, and I actually, the thought was just rolling through my mind, like, what if we rolled back into that 40 one more time? Like, maybe we can find the 2x2, maybe that group is in there. But I wasn't very hopeful. Again, you know, like, I'd seen the neighbors and everything, and I was like, you know, I think it really is just by chance if something's there. And so we're rolling back, and I was trying to decide if I was going to bring it up or not. And Mark, God bless his soul, he actually brought it up for me. And he's like, hey, he's like, since we have a little light left, he's like, what if we, you know, roll back into that 40 one more time? And Ken's like, sure, you know, no problem. And so we get back, we're almost to his house. We exit off on the road, and he has to take an easement to the 40. It doesn't touch the road or anything. So, you know, we're passing the shooting range, and there's no vehicles. So, like, all right, I don't think anybody's been back here or is currently back here. So we get back there, and we get, you know, roughly like 100 yards or so from his little feed station, and it's pretty dang dark. So we roll the windows down, and we're glassing, and nothing. No does, no bucks, nothing bedded down. You know, we're glassing it pretty dang good, but there's just nothing there. And so, I kid you not, Ken actually reaches up and puts his hand on the shifter to throw it in reverse for us to get out of there. And all of a sudden I hear him say, what's that? And again, like as if sent from God, a buck walks over the ridge and is coming towards us. And so we pull up our binoculars and I can tell right away, it's not a trophy, but it's like a decent looking buck, you know, about as wide as its ears. Nothing crazy, and you know, Ken's kind of like, I mean, do you want to shoot it? And I'm like, I mean, it's better than going home empty-handed. So I have property or, you know, family property, like I manage it and all that, and I can tell it's not a super old deer. You know, my guess is it's probably a 3-year-old. And so I asked him probably 3 times. I was like, hey, like, are you sure you don't mind me shooting this? And he's like, man, I don't care. He's like, this, you know, this is not the big property. He's like, there's hunters all around here. He's like, if you don't shoot it, somebody else is. And I asked him again. I was like, are you sure? He's like, yes, I'm sure. And so I look at it again. And again, I'm like, you know, not a monster, but decent. And finally, I make up my mind. I was like, hey, like, if you're sure you're cool with it, I'll shoot it. He's like, dude, shoot it. So I get out and I walk around and I put my bipod up on the hood of the truck. And again, it's kind of weird. Like, you know, I'm calling this like a mountain hunt and a Western hunt and all this. And like all of our shots were off the truck, but that's just kind of how the cookie crumbled. So put my gun and I'm shooting over the hood, and he ranged it at 230 yards. So again, like perfect gun sighted it at 200, find the buck in the scope, squeeze the trigger. And I can see right away that it was a good hit. I mean, hair flew up and stuff. And I can tell he's running a little bit, but he's struggling. And he actually, like, he completely disappeared behind a yucca. And I'm like, did he go down? Is there, like, a draw there? Like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, I see him, like, flop over like a exaggerated, I don't know, actor or something, and flop over on his back. And he was down for the count. And so literally 15 minutes left of light on the last day, I killed my first ever mule deer buck. And we were actually pleasantly surprised when we got up to him. He was actually a little bit bigger than any of us thought, which was good and bad. I'm happy he was bigger than I thought. I actually thought he was like a 2x2 kind of forkhorn. He ended up being a 5x5, which is awesome. You know, and he... like I said, like my dream, like he looked like a mule deer. Like he had the big forks and everything, had some little brow tines like, you know, mule deer usually do. At the same time, I equally felt worse because I felt like I had just shot, you know, a future trophy for poor Ken. But he reassured me. He's like, really, man, he's like, if this was on the other side of the property, like I probably wouldn't have had you shoot it, or I would have cared if you did, you know, if it was on his main property. But he's like, people hunt all over the place. He's like, very small chance that this thing was going to make it. So that made me feel better. And that was it. That was the hunt. So 4 days all came down to the last day. I got an Audad, Mark got an Audad, and then I shot a mule deer. So again, just an awesome ending to the story. Couldn't ask for anything better. I ended up, I was thinking about trying to leave that night to head home, but we had so much to do that I ended up staying that night, and, we, you know, worked on cutting up and skinning animals the next day, and I ended up leaving kind of late morning the next morning. My Audad ended up going 32 inches. So like I mentioned earlier, like trophy is you know, 30 inches. Mine ended up going 32. Mark's, I think, ended up scoring 26. So still, you know, pretty dang good goat. Mine was noticeably bigger. Like we put them side by side, and I have a picture of them kind of like body wise, massive. And then, you know, when you kind of look like down on them, their horns, like mine was just noticeably bigger and not just long. Like that's the only score, is just the length, but just heavy. And, you know, I sent it to a couple of my buddies, and one of my buddies actually has a buddy who lives out in that area. And so he's very familiar with Audad. He's hunted them. And something he told me that I didn't know was when they get to a certain size, when they get big enough, they grow a little bit of hair between their horns. And mine had that little strip of hair, which was awesome. So, yeah, I mean, definitely a trophy goat. And so even though I went out there for a mule deer and I ended up killing a mule deer, like the Audad stole the show. That was the real trophy in my mind. So, but like I mentioned before, came home just as excited as could be, super heavy. I almost ran into a cooler situation. Like I just brought my one Yeti cause I only planned on killing one animal. And I had kind of thought already that, you know, I might be able to switch out for like an Audad, but I was not expecting to shoot one of each. And so I just brought the one cooler. And so I had to give up a little meat, but I was more than happy to donate a little bit to Ken. So I brought home basically all the major cuts. Like I was able to fit all four quarters of both animals, both back straps, tenderloins, and the neck meat of the Audad. But I basically wasn't able to keep, like, you know, the rib meat and just all the random little meat that kind of comes off as you're cutting an animal up. But I was more than happy to donate that to Ken and his family. You know, they pretty much live off of wild game. And then something real quick, I had several people ask me, and I've always been curious too, just as far as like the meat on an Audad, because I had always heard it was not good. And kind of the two big exotics in Texas and really most of the United States are Audad and Axis. And I'd always heard, and I've actually had it, that Axis meat was fantastic, and I agree it is, and that Audad meat was terrible. And so, like, one of the first questions I actually asked him when we got there was about the Audad. And I was like, hey, like, I've always heard Audad is no good. Like, what do you guys think? And he's like, oh man, he's like, we hear that all the time. He walked over to the fridge and he pulled out an Audad roast that him and his wife had, you know, had for dinner the night before. And he actually put some on a plate and heated it up and gave it to me and Mark. And it was delicious. I loved it. And then he told us after we tried it, and he's like, that's actually neck meat. He's like, that's not even, you know, quote unquote, the good cuts. And so like if somebody would have gave me that and not told me what it was, I would have just said it was like beef with an interesting seasoning. Like it wasn't gamey. It wasn't tough. It was incredibly tender, actually. It tasted a little different, but it tasted good. You know, it was a good different. So I'm super excited about it. And he said he's had several people come out there and shoot a goat and not even be willing to try it because, you know, they've just heard the rumors. You know, they just shoot it and they take the cape and the horns and leave, which he's okay with because then he gets it for himself. But he was actually super happy that Mark also wanted the meat. He took the whole thing, and he took the ribs and everything. And so he was actually super happy that both of us were interested in the meat and taking the meat and everything like that. And so it's kind of a shame to think about, you know, all the people going out there and hunting and just kind of, you know, tossing it away, which again, it goes to use, you know, Mark uses it or gives it away. So it's not like it's just wasted, but, you know, kind of sad to think that people don't want to take advantage of that. So yeah, that was the hunt. Like I said, it was not what I was expecting. Honestly, it was not quite what I signed up for, but I definitely would not trade it. Like I mentioned, I think there are definitely good deer in that area. I mean, like I said, you know, he had mounts in his house that were massive. I mean, I would have been over the moon to shoot those deer, and they had all come, you know, off this place. He showed us the picture of the one he had seen. I think he'd spotted it like 2 weeks before we got there. So, you know, I'm sure it's around there somewhere. But I think the big problem is just the aw dad. But yeah, still a really fun hunt. Ken and his wife took such good care of us. We were in like a trailer house kind of just down below their house. So had my own room. We had a full kitchen in there, but I mean, they did all the cooking, all the food and stuff like that. I think I mentioned, you know, I'd bought a bunch of snacks and stuff, and you know, I'm a pretty dadgum picky eater. So I had, you know, my bread and my peanut butter just in case, you know, I didn't like what they were cooking, but, they made it work, and they were such good cooks. I ended up eating pretty much everything they made. So yeah, they took awesome care of us, and we had a fantastic time. And like I said, any hunt that comes with a consolation prize, you know, it worked out to where I got both. But if all I would have got was just that Audad instead of the mule deer, I would have come home super, super happy. And the same with Mark. You know, like I said, he'd, you know, quote unquote, paid for a lesser hunt, you know, the management buck type hunt. But same thing, you know, and I'll say this, like I said, like when he booked a, or whatever, whoever books a management hunt with them, like, you're still going to get a pretty dadgum good animal. Like I said, the bucks that we passed up several times, like, would have technically been, like, they were animals that they wanted out of the herd, you know, a management, like, the definition of a management buck, but they were still trying to get them something bigger and nicer, and so that was pretty awesome. And then, like I said, the bonus of the Audad just really put the cherry on top. So yeah, that was my hunt. Finally had a successful hunt. That was my third of my four big hunts this year. So Kansas was one, McAllister was one, this was one, and then in January, I'm going on a crane and goose hunt with a couple buddies. So really looking forward to that, but man, it is so good to finally come home from one of these big hunts with something in the back of the truck. Now I just got to buckle down and find a dadgum whitetail buck. What I am supposedly good at, I have not accomplished this year. So, got to buckle down, find a good buck, get after it. I am 100% completely out of brownie points after all these big trips. So, sneaking away for some whitetail hunts is going to be difficult. But, man, I can't remember if I'm on a 4 or 5 year streak filling both my buck tags, and keeping that streak alive is not looking so good right now. So we'll see what I can get done over the next couple weeks. But yeah, I'm definitely not gonna give up yet. But time is not on my side. So all right, we are like at an hour and 20 minutes or something like that. So I'm gonna go ahead and shut this down. But man, thank you guys so much for listening to this show. I can't tell y'all how much I appreciate it. I think we're pretty much almost to the day at 4 years right now. So thank you guys so much. I can't believe all the support you guys have given me. I love you guys so much. And until next week, I will see y'all right back here on the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me? Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances. Check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those New Year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO score 8 model. Offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details.
Experian.
It's tax season, and at LifeLock, we know you're tired of numbers. But here's a big one you need to hear. Billions. That's the amount of money in refunds the IRS has flagged for possible identity fraud. Now here's another big number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, we'll fix it guaranteed. One last big number. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for the threats you can't control. Terms apply.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.